Many boffins died to bring you this podcast.
Everybody, welcome back to the Star Wars Report podcast. Hey, didn't see you there. Well, who am I kidding? Yes, I did. Hey, it's another episode of the Star Wars Report. We're in the thick of Comic-Con weekend here in the United States as I record this. Man, it's 2 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon, and the news has been hitting fast and furious on all things geek and pop culture from San Diego. So we're not really going to touch on that in this particular episode. The following is an amazing and fun interview that I just conducted earlier this morning with a good friend of mine, Father Roderick Von Hogan. So I'll introduce him in just a moment, but I just wanted to give you guys a little heads up. We'll be talking about all the Comic-Con news coming up soon. We've got a feedback episode, so keep those emails coming in. And that's all the housekeeping. Yeah, stay tuned. We've got some good guests coming up. And without further ado, let us continue on. Today I'm joined by a good friend of mine that I've made through podcasting. You can hear him and myself on such podcasts as The Secrets of Star Wars, which I've occasionally crashed. And you can also hear myself a little bit more often on the Secrets of the Hobbit podcast. He's the founder of SQPN.com, the StarQuest Production Network, and a prolific podcaster for many years. He is sort of my Obi-Wan Kenobi of podcasting. I'd like to welcome to the program Father Roderick Von Hogan.
Hey, Riley, thanks for having me. Oh. I'm scratching my beard as I kneel down and wonder if I ever had a droid.
Roderick Von Hogan. Now that's a name I've not heard in a long time.
Oh, you're so much better at imitating Obi-Wan and many other characters, by the way.
Oh, we miss Alec Guinness. Man, that's probably going to be one of the hardest things about Episode 7 is to kind of all those returning characters that we love so much, but no Force Ghost Alec Guinness.
But we have Mark Hamill taking his place, basically.
This is true.
Well, sporting a very similar beard, and I bet you he's going to be an Obi-Wan Kenobi type guy.
Now that beard of Mark Hamill's, now that is something to respect. That commands Mark Hamill's beard, I mean, needs its own Twitter account.
And he suffered for it so much because in the beginning it didn't grow at all. He was like, you know, I've been waiting for it. Like, this is like a 2 weeks beard and still looks like nothing. But I recently saw some footage and it truly looked like a Jedi beard.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I appreciate you coming on. I was going to kind of, we'll kind of swing around on some of the recent news as I talk to you. But I do want to kind of start off with, you released a book. It was last year. I'm trying to remember the date it came out. Geek Priest.
I don't remember when it was. It's been a long time in the making, but it was released last year. It's called Geek Priest: Adventures of a New Media Pioneer.
And quickly, where can folks find it? Because I'm going to reference it a lot.
Oh, you can just go to sqpn.com/geekpriest, and that will give you the links to the various versions of the book. Because of course, it's printed on old-fashioned analog paper, but it's also available in various digital formats. And there's even an audiobook version, which is very much like a podcast, but then you pay money for it.
There you go. No, and it's fantastic stuff because I'll tell you what, I'll start off with, I remember reading the Star Wars chapter, and it started off, and you talked about finding yourself in Denver, Colorado, stuck in the rain and the horrible weather of the weekend of Star Wars Celebration 1. And I think just for people, especially if any listeners aren't familiar with you, I think a great way to start out is just how did a Catholic priest from the Netherlands find himself in Denver in 1999 at Star Wars Celebration 1?
It's something that I was wondering at that moment as well. I had to pinch myself to make sure I wasn't dreaming, because there I was, and I was waiting in line. I still remember it, for the first event in one of the tents that they build up, and it was a mud pool. This might as well have been a Star Wars planet, like the mud planet. I think they had the worst rain in a decade or something like that. And behind me, there were a couple of stormtroopers. And Darth Vader, right behind me, and I was standing there in my vestments as a priest. And I was like, "How did I end up here?" Well, it's actually it's a long story, but I'll try to keep it short. I was at the time the author of a website, and you have to keep in mind that this was in the beginning of the internet, so. We just were able to get it at home. It was still through that telephone line, you know, with incredibly slow speeds.
When logging into the internet was kind of like listening to a mouse droid.
Yeah, exactly. It was a very tedious procedure. This was in the era of GeoCities, which was a platform on which you could build your own website. So we're really talking about a galaxy for most listeners far, far away, a long time ago. Some of you weren't even born. But I thought it was the most amazing thing ever, because you could connect through the internet to a lot of Star Wars fans. And as a Star Wars fan in the Netherlands, I felt very much alone. Star Wars is not as much of a let's say an iconic mythology that is part of popular culture. It's just something that among many other franchises. So people keep confusing it with Star Trek and, you know, Yoda with Spock, etc. So as a Star Wars fan, you're kind of on your own. And thanks to the internet, you could connect to all these fans. And when the prequels were being developed, I was following every little bit of information, just as much as I'm doing right now for the new Star Wars movies. I was just reading every website, gathering all the spoilers. And at one point, I was like, you know what? We should try to patch together these little fragments, these pieces of the puzzle, and see if we can come up with at least a hypothesis of what this story will be about. And we had, of course, a few pointers. This had to be about Anakin Skywalker and how he became Darth Vader, but that was about it. And so that's what I did. I built a small website, started off at GeoCities. And in addition to trying to puzzle together these fragments, and a lot of the rumors were false, of course, just as they are today. But I was just like hypothesizing about it. I also created Photoshopped pictures where I would take photos of certain actors that were rumored to be in the prequels, and then I just created a Star Wars background or dressed them up in a Jedi robe or something like that. And that combination of daily updates, like blog posts, we would call them today, with photos or Photoshop pictures was an instant hit. And it became so big that I was approached by the folks over at TheForce.net if I wanted to join them. And to me, that was like, you know, Luke Skywalker on Tatooine getting a call by a bunch of Jedi asking him if he wanted to join the Jedi. So, yes. Sure, absolutely. And that made the site even bigger and bigger and bigger. And then when the movie was about to premiere, Lucasfilm organized the very first ever Star Wars celebration. Mm. And I just knew I had to get there. But I didn't know how because I was a priest in a parish, didn't have much money. And so I sold some of my Photoshopped pictures to a sci-fi magazine, and they paid so well that I could afford to fly to the United States and go to Denver. And that's how I ended up in Denver, in the rain, next to Darth Vader.
What a wild, wild west kind of days, where like that's such early internet. The idea now of a fan site being profitable or being able to make that kind of journey or pilgrimage, if you will, all the way to the United States for a Star Wars convention. That makes sense now, as we, you know, as Comic-Con's going on right now with 100,000 people converging on San Diego. But back in those days, like, that had to be a surreal experience to find yourself, at that level of fandom. I guess it was crazy.
In
the dawn of the internet.
And it was both ways. I was stunned and baffled to be among so many Star Wars fans. And we don't have that culture. We didn't have that culture of dressing up like Princess Leia in a slave bikini outfit. And that, so I was like, what? What are all these people wearing? And I remember it was also quite special for someone from Europe to fly all the way to Denver for that convention. And Anthony Daniels was one of the guys who was hosting the convention. So he was walking around in this big tent, warming up the public, because we were all waiting for McCallum and for, you know, a couple of the actors to do their presentation. And he's a great, you know, showman. So he just walked around and just letting people applaud. And so who's from Nebraska and who's from California and who's from overseas? And then he walks up to me and says, of course, we have Father Roderick here from the Netherlands. And I was like, dude, wait, you... What? It was the most surreal thing ever. That wasn't the only one, but later on in during one of the panels, Rick McCallum, you know, we could ask questions, and so I stand there and I was like, okay, so we know that in The Phantom Menace we will see this planet and that planet and that planet. In the second prequel, what other planets are you contemplating? What kind of environments are we going to see in Star Wars? And Rick McCallum grabs the microphone and he says, yeah, I'm not going to tell you because you're going to post it immediately on your website. And it's like, oh, man. So it turns out that my website was actually quite known by the people over at Lucasfilm and also at ILM. They were following my blog post because, of course, this was still the beginning also of fandom and online fandom. And they didn't really know how to tackle this because things started to leak out, rumors, and they were still debating whether to, you know, put out cease and desist orders or work with the fans. Because they were afraid that, you know, people might steal these ideas, come out with a similar type of storyline. And so there were a lot of discussions internally, which, of course, we had no idea about, whether or not, you know, to put a lid on these darn bloggers. And so, but it was so surreal. I knew that a lot of people were following the website, but I had no idea that even in, you know, over at Lucasfilm and at Skywalker Ranch, they were, you know, reading these blogs. So yeah, it was the most amazing time of my life.
No, I'll never forget. It was at was it last year? Yeah, it was at Dragon Con last year, and Matt Martin, who does a lot of the website of Lucasfilm right now, he does a lot of stuff with StarWars.com. He was kind of Lucasfilm's not representative because he wasn't really on panels or in official capacity, but he was just kind of checking out the convention at Dragon Con because Dragon Con's it's a very kind of fan run, very almost anti corporate. It's like the anti Comic Con. You don't see big studios or big things. It's all kind of fan run. So he was just kind of like the Lucasfilm mole in a sort of a way. But of course, I'm familiar with him and I see him on Twitter and I know he's involved with Lucasfilm. And he's kind of a public face for him. And then I remember getting to meet him briefly after a panel that we were at, and a friend of mine introduced us, and he's like, oh, yeah, Star Wars Report, I know about it. And I just kind of had a moment, like, because I'd never thought about it. I mean, I guess it makes sense. I mean, if you were on a big site, especially today, I imagine it was probably more of a surprise back then. But even I, in the year 2013, hadn't really considered that the fact that I'd run a Star Wars fan site for a few years would have, I guess, gotten under the radar of Uncle George, or at least Uncle George's company. And so it's a weird feeling, but it's also fun. And of course, now I think there were some turbulent times with Lucasfilm's relations with the fan side of things, because in the age of the internet, you do have, I mean, even with Episode 7, it's proven just how much we crave for these rumors and casting announcements. And like, I remember, wasn't there, and see, this is me kind of I'm going to geek out for a minute just because I want to hear about this era of fandom that I wasn't even a part of, where like, didn't like the script of Episode 7 leak to theforce.net and there was a big like kerfuffle at some point?
We had a conference call at one point with Lucasfilm with McCallum and with some other people. And they were very much afraid that we had the script and that we knew too much and that we would leak it all out just to get, you know, more hits. And they just wanted to make sure that we didn't. So, but we had a very good discussion. And I think this was all part of us as fans learning what would be beneficial to the movies, but also vice versa for Lucasfilm to learn how, you know, what we want as fans and what we need as, you know, as fuel for our fandom. And I think those discussions like that nowadays, there are entire strategies devised for, you know, handling this fan interest. And it's vital in the whole public relations around a movie and the whole marketing of the movie. The fans are necessary. Mm. So in many ways, I think that today it's much more scripted and controlled. And especially, we know that J.J. Abrams is a master at this, at, you know, knowing exactly what to reveal, how to get us excited, but also how to be like a magician who is like, look here, so we don't look there. But at the time, that was all brand new for Lucasfilm. And you know what? I didn't even know what my fellow Force.net members knew or didn't know. I was very careful to only use rumors that were already published. It was at one point, and this was right before I left for the United States. One morning, I wake up and the mailman is at my door with a huge envelope from the United States. It's one of those padded white envelopes, and there's no sender on it. Nothing. It's just my name. So I take it, I walk up the stairs,
like,
and I open
these
it.
In these parts, that's actually kind of a scary experience.
Is it?
Like, there's no return address, and like,
there was
is
no
this
return address.
Terrifying was package.
But I could feel that there was there was paper in there. So I open it, and I remember just grabbing inside that envelope and taking out this, I think about 150, 200 pages. And the first page just has this, you know, typewriter font. And it says, you know, episode one, The Phantom Menace. And it's the script. It's the entire shooting script. And this is still months before the premiere.
Let's do a little bit of quick, wait a second. So May 19th, 1999 is the date of release. Celebration 1, April 1999. And this is before you left. So this is more than a month out.
Yeah, a couple of weeks before it.
Wow. That's
it was a shooting script, and what was fun was that I immediately saw it was real because I'd already figured out quite a few things, and it was way too normal to be like a fan thing, because sometimes people would make up entire scripts, and that's what happens now with movies as well. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's even done on purpose to mislead us, the fans, about certain plot points. But back then, you know, I had dealt for years with all the rumors. So you get like this sixth sense of, well, this is true and this is just made up. This is way too fanboyish. So I knew that I had the script. The second thing that was interesting was that there were lines in there that were different from the lines that I had heard. So that convinced me even more that this was real, because it was probably a shooting script that had been adapted afterwards and, you know, modified after a couple of retakes. And so I had like an earlier version of the script. And I know that at the time I made the decision, I'm not going to use this. I did read it, of course, every single syllable of it several times, but I vowed to never use that information on my website. I just couldn't. But it made the whole process of, you know, trying to puzzle together the story a little bit strange, because I already knew exactly what the movie would be about. I just could only reveal what was already revealed elsewhere.
Wow.
And I'm still glad I did that. I'm, and you know what? The funny thing is, afterward, I got a lot of questions from people saying, you know, the fact that you knew all this, that you were so spoiled, did it also spoil the movie for you? Did it in one way or another take away the joy of seeing that for the first time? I would say, on the contrary, it made my experience of the movie so much more intense, because I could focus on the way that story that I knew so well was visualized. And every time it was a surprise, like, oh, That's how it looks like. You know, you can read the lines, you can read the descriptions, but that's mm-hmm. totally different from seeing it and, and having it acted out in front of you. So it was the thrill of a story that I knew so well and that suddenly came alive and became so much more. It's like music. You can have a partition with, I don't know, a symphony, and you read the notes and you're like, okay, I kind of see the melody lines and I see the instruments mm-hmm. and then hearing it and hearing the interpretation, and it adds so much more to the experience. And so I never regret it, having followed the spoilers for so long. And it's, I had fun with the prequels for many more years than a lot of the fans who just watched the movie and were disappointed about Jar Jar and then just, you know, just watched it two or three times afterwards, and that was it.
Well, I'll tell you what, you may have just convinced me, because I've talked about it a few times on the show where, right, so far I've kind of straddled a line where I've been more than happy to consume some of the general rumors and then some of the casting announcements and some of the other stuff like that, and the J.J. Abrams videos, which, by the way, side note, J.J. Abrams, like, there was no template for fan interaction now. J.J. Abrams is like, he's defining the best way to do it. Like, these UNICEF charity videos, for it helps with, like, the a good impression. It also, they're revealing, you know, an X-Wing. Like, that's amazing, the fact that they're doing that and doing it in such a clever way. It's sort of like when the pictures leaked of the set, instead of going berserk and suing everybody, J.J. Abrams just takes a little note and writes, you know.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
And
claims.
I think he does that because he knows that it's just, these are details. We don't know anything about that story. And I think he's a masterful, he's the guy from the mystery box.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the way he handles that script. So
I was watching that TED Talk. If you guys are listening to this and you haven't seen the J.J. Abrams mystery box TED Talk, it's only like 13 minutes. Look it up on YouTube. It's amazing because it tells you a whole lot about the guy as a storyteller. But I say all that to say, so like in the back of my head, I've always said, well, like if they're like really specific plot spoilers or if like the script leaks, I don't think I'm going to read it. I think it would hurt my enjoyment. But man, hearing your story, Father, is you're kind of convincing me. I don't know.
I mean, it's something, of course, you have to make a choice.
Yeah.
And you can never go back in time and fix it. If it does spoil you, well, then there's no way back. But honestly, for me, the joy was to see the visualization of what I knew. And even then, you think you know everything. And this is true also for The Hobbit. I mean, we've talked about the secrets of The Hobbit and, mm-hmm. and what would be in the movies. And then when you go see the movie and there is just so much that you didn't guess and that is still a surprise. So,
yeah.
And I think the chances that nowadays you would end up with the full shooting script are slightly slimmer than they were back then.
So you're dashing.
It's been upped a little bit.
You're dashing my hopes that somehow, like here in Fayetteville, Georgia, a yellow envelope anonymously addressed will then show up in my mailbox. You've dashed my hopes, sir. No, but I'll tell you, that is a good example. It's like, as huge Tolkien fans, it's not like when we go to see the Hobbit Battle of Five Armies this Christmas. We've all read the books a million times, there's nothing like more detailed plot reveal. If you want like a detailed shooting script or template, you have the entire book that you've memorized from your childhood, and it's not like that. If you ask whether someone who's a huge Tolkien fan who's read the books over and over is going to enjoy The Hobbit, or if just a general moviegoer is, I would say the huge Tolkien fan would enjoy the film more. So that's a good comparison. I don't know. I think you've convinced me.
Well, and don't forget that it's the story is one thing. And you can know exactly what will happen and what will happen next and know how the movie ends. But then you've got the chemistry, you've got the humor, you've got, you know, the music, the sound effects, all that. You cannot write them down. It's something you have to experience. And I think that is what makes Star Wars even much more than the story. It's just the whole and the emotion. I mean, I bet you've heard Kevin Smith talking about how he felt when he first saw the Millennium Falcon.
Oh, yes.
Walked up the ramp. Well, It's that kind of stuff. Even if you would describe it, you cannot guess how you will feel when you watch this movie. And from the looks of it, from what I've heard from the people that had some glimpses of the set, this is going to be perhaps the biggest Star Wars movie ever. So I'm not afraid. I just want to enjoy it to the fullest, every single second of it.
Oh, absolutely. And I'll tell you what, like now you've got me, now we're on a roll. Now I'm excited because I want to bring it up. We haven't talked about it on the show, so this is a perfect time to bring it up. A few days ago, today's the 27th, so 2 or 3 days ago, Devin Faraci, who's a reporter over at Badass Digest, dropped some pretty hefty possible, again, these are all possible spoilers for episode 7. So by the way, if you're listening to the interview and you're not like myself, who was just convinced to devour every single bit of information now about Star Wars Episode 7 by Father Roderick. If you're not like me, now's your chance to kind of turn it down just for a few minutes because we're going to talk
Hold on. If this is what I think it is, then you don't have to fear because I think it is total. It's absolutely nonsense. But anyway, continue.
Total Bantha Poodoo, possibly. But this is from Devin Faraci. He reports that, and I'm just going to highlight right here. The episode 7 will open with the traditional crawl, you know, giving us where we are, what's going on. And then when it fades off screen, we will indeed get, instead of a ship, a hand floating through space with a lightsaber. And it's Luke Skywalker's lightsaber. At which point, the planet, it falls to his Tatooine, where it's discovered by John Boyega and Daisy Ridley's character. And they go off with Han Solo and like, what is this thing? And he's like, it's Luke Skywalker's lightsaber, and I haven't seen him for 30 years. We gotta go find him. And boom, episode 7 begins.
Yeah. Well, if that's the plot for this new Star Wars movie, then I'd say bring back Jar Jar, because that would be more entertaining than this.
Who comes up with this?
It's total nonsense. How do they dare to print that? That's the biggest pile of Bantha Poodoo that I've ever seen. Even in my time, when I was young, the fan made up stuff was better than this. Come on. No, it's
ridiculous.
You don't
think the severed hand of Luke, bring me the hands of Skywalker. Yeah. It's not,
Of course it's Luke Skywalker's lightsaber. And everyone who hasn't seen these movies for, I don't know, 20, 30 years, exactly, immediately identifies that as Luke Skywalker's lightsaber. It's not even on. Come on. His hand. I think he already lost his hand.
Well,
how many hands does he have?
Okay, well, I'll play devil's advocate I'll play devil's advocate for like 1 second.
Sure.
So, as far as the plot premise goes, this does, okay. I'm going to kind of reference heavily, so I'll go ahead and give him a plug. He was on the show last week. Bobby Roberts from the Full of Sith podcast, he's one of the few, because Father, your opinion is actually the popular one. I hear a lot of people kind of shooting this one down.
He likes to be contrarian.
it does sound kind of outlandish, but on the other hand, it does, first of all, Devin Faraci as a reporter is usually pretty good. And this is not me firsthand knowledge. This is from Bobby Roberts that he was talking about, because he's usually right, with a lot of the rumors he's reported before in movie making. So, it would probably be fair to say that he got this information. The question would be who fed it to him and whether that was accurate. So it's probably not a question of the actual source itself. It's probably the source's source, so to speak. But it does kind of sound slightly J.J. Abramsy, if you know what I mean. It does sound like that kind of plot device where we're going to turn things on our head and we're going to see the mechanical severed hand of Luke Skywalker kind of symbolically, because, you know, as remember, the great moment in Return of the Jedi when he sees what he could become when he looks at his mechanical hand. So that's like, it links it to like the high point of Return of the Jedi. And that, I could see that being a through link. The thing that sounds strange to me is just the way it's described, to where it sounds to me like either it's totally bogus or mostly bogus. So I think I'm going to agree with you, but I think there might be like a thread or two that are legitimate that got like twisted in third, fourth, and fifth.
That's always how you construct a false rumor. This is 101 how to make up Star Wars rumors. You always take a few things that the audience already know. So like, John Boyega and Daisy Whitney. And then you combine that with a location that we already know is going to be part of Star Wars. And then you add in something totally strange that nobody has, you know, mentioned yet. So it piques the curiosity. That's how you construct a false rumor. You inject a little bit of truth and a little bit of like obvious stuff, and then you combine it with something that is so weird that nobody, you know, could have. I've seen so many of these rumors, and it just even visually doesn't make sense. How can you just imagine the scene? You've just seen the crawl, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're panning down. These movies are also going to be in 3D later on, probably, you know, that there will be post-conversion and everything. So you're focusing your eyes on that text that is drifting away in the distance. And all of a sudden, you have to kind of focus on an object that has to be so close to the camera because it's just a hand and a lightsaber and probably also a dark hand. I mean, like in a kind of dark lightsaber. And then you've got this big planet of Tatooine. Where's the contrast in that? It's going to be so jarring and so... Visually, there is no way that this could work. Of course, I'm going to eat up my hat if this turns out to be true. But this is just has every element of being one of the false rumors. And I actually think if this journalist is very reliable, then he is just being played. Or even worse, he might be part of the play itself and just, you know, being involved in some kind of misinformation scheme. I'm not much into, you know, conspiracy theories, but we know that J.J. Abrams has done this in the past with Star Trek as well.
He just
deliberately comes up with these false rumors and makes sure that we get to hear them so that we don't think about other ways in which this movie could open.
Or just lies to the press in the case of Star Trek.
Yeah, of course. No, of course it's not going to be a repeat. No, Khan is not going to be in a movie. Uh-huh.
Absolutely not. I don't know who this John fellow is, but definitely not Khan.
No, I would say, you know, in this situation, this is still quite early. Trust no one and just, you know, believe what you see. It sounds a bit weird for a priest to say that, but honestly, if it's not on a spy photo, don't believe it because a lot of it will be misinformation. And there are some incredibly creative fans out there that just want their, you know, few seconds of fame. And even though, you know, their name might not be mentioned, it's like graffiti, you know, just seeing your fake rumor plastered all over the internet gives some people a lot of satisfaction. But I don't buy it.
Yeah, what's interesting, I'm not sure I do. I might be a little bit more gullible than you, Father. But like, from the source, it is supposed to be, all right, so Devin Faraci on Twitter, he tweeted the following. He said, my Star Wars story, I fully expect denials, but I'm pretty confident this is a multiple source story. I guess we'll see in 2015. So he's being very open about he's pretty sure he's done multiple sources, which he has in the past. I think he's just being fed something.
Him being so honest about that makes the rumor even more believable, don't you think? It's like, most people won't believe this, but .. It's part of the fun. It's part of the play. And I mean, I enjoy these stories. And I'm like, look, the first time I read that, I laughed out loud. It's like, oh my gosh, this is even worse than the stuff that they made up for the prequels. Cause man, we had some fake rumors. I'm surprised. And it's probably also a sign of how masterful, J.J. Abrams is playing the media. But back then in the days of the prequels, there were way more rumors and so many, you know, people that said that they had sources. And just compared to nowadays, I think we are much more a visual culture. So we speculate about the spy photos and the little tidbits that J.J. Abrams feeds us. But there doesn't seem to be that same explosion of fantasy that we saw in those days, which, by the way, was the worst for the Phantom Menace. And then afterwards for 2 and 3, much less so.
Yeah. No, wasn't it like the Charlton Heston as Yoda rumor? I remember that. I remember hearing about that as a rumor.
Like Yoda would have a family and we'd see his kids and his father and just the wackiest things.
And suddenly it would be like a 3-hour long biblical reinterpretation of the Phantom Menace.
I think if you would compile all the rumors that were doing the rounds back then, and some of them were pretty darn believable, you know, you would end up with a 50-hour saga. It's just impossible.
So, like, it would be the greatest trolley move in the world to just take all of the rumors from back then and then kind of repurpose them and change some names and stuff and then just start leaking those rumors and say they're about Episode 7.
Oh, I think for some of those rumors, that's absolutely the case. They're just warmed up rumors from back then. Actually, it could be a great film project of someone who would just take the false rumors and make a movie out of that. How cool would that be? The Star Wars movie that, you know, that starts with that hand in space. I want to see that now.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because his, well, and here's the thing about Devin Faraci's post on Badass Digest, and I'll put it in the show notes, but I kind of paraphrased, but what basically his setup does lend towards the general, and the more reliable sources that have come through is that this is a movie about a search for Luke Skywalker. And I think that's pretty likely at this point because of the number of people who've confirmed that. It's just a matter of, is Devin Faraci set up the right one, which I think is more questionable. But I'll tell you what, a movie about a search for Luke Skywalker, especially if, as Devin says, the fact about him having disappeared after Return of the Jedi, I have to admit, I do love the idea of a Star Wars Episode 7, which the plot is radically different than the expanded universe. Because,
sure.
Like, so here's a good example. At Comic-Con, there Episode 7 does not have any presence at Comic-Con, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Sad face. But they have the new Star Wars Rebels TV show and Star Wars books, and they made a Star Wars comics announcement where, like, Marvel is recoloring and repurposing and republishing their old original Star Wars line from the 70s. And so Marvel's republishing, and then they announced a new expanded universe book featuring Asajj Ventress and and Quinlan Vos, who are two popular EU characters from the prequel era. And it's just what kind of, and I kind of hate to say this in some ways, but these are all either content that's been published before or characters that were popular in the old expanded universe. I think I'd prefer a totally clean slate and new direction. Because if it's too similar to what's already been done, I think you're kind of cheating yourself as far as storytelling goes. So I would hate to see an Episode 7 where Han Solo and Princess Leia have a twin son and daughter, and then a third son who's a little bit younger, and then Luke Skywalker gets married to some former dark side user. Like, if it's similar in that, if it's that close to the expanded universe, I think I'd be kind of disappointed.
No, but that's, I think, the whole reason that they decided to come up with that whole, you know, Star Wars myths, or was it Star Wars Legends? To create space for a totally different approach and a storyline. It's one of the first things that J.J. Abrams said in the interviews last year. He said, I want to create a storyline that will be surprising, where you have that same sense of anticipation that you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know this universe that we're going to venture into. At the same time, this still has to be Star Wars structurally. And I think that the internal narrative structure of the Star Wars movies is a given. You cannot remove that. And so if this first movie is all going to be about a quest to find Luke Skywalker, that would be a thematic and structural break with the past. And it wouldn't be Star Wars. I think there might be a little bit of searching going on, but I cannot believe that that is going to be the plot that will move the story forward. It's just not interesting enough. Why would you have a whole movie revolving about finding Luke Skywalker and you end up finding a guy with a beard? I mean, it's not exciting enough.
Well,
there has to be something much more at stake.
Well, it's interesting because, like, thematically, the thrust of the first act of Star Wars Episode 4, of course, is a search for Obi-Wan Kenobi. R2-D2 needs to find Obi-Wan Kenobi. And it worked very well for that, introducing the characters and kind of getting the plot moving, and you kind of rooting for R2. And there's these, it's sort of like, it's a very traditional narrative structure where you have, like, this small mini quest, this thing that's at the beginning of the story. And you're like, all right, they got to Obi-Wan Kenobi. Everything's okay now. Oh, wait. And then suddenly you realize the world expands, and you realize that there's a much bigger conflict. And
Obi-Wan Kenobi in the story as an archetype represents the teacher. And the teacher is important to the hero or heroes, but usually it's one hero or heroine. Why not? In this case, it could be Daisy Ridley's character, where he becomes the teacher, the tutor. Who is there to pass on his knowledge to the true hero of the story. He is not going to solve the problem, but he's going to help the main character, the main hero, to learn and master the Force to save the universe in a way. So that is a role that I can totally see for Luke Skywalker. It's also something that George Lucas himself has hinted to many, many times, that these new movies would be about passing on the Force and the teachings of the Jedi to a new generation. So that is a role that I see. But having the entire movie revolve around this quest for a teacher, I don't think so. I think that would be slowing down the movie to a crawl. And No, I think it's probably part. This could just be part, a small, tiny little part of the story. Also, something that people tend to forget is the amount of things that happen in a Star Wars movie is astonishing. You go from planet to planet. Usually there are two or three storylines at the same time. You go to so many different locations. And that's something I think that even if we hear some plot points, it might still be a tiny little piece of the entire puzzle. And there might be way more in this first movie than we think on the basis of what we've heard. So yeah. this quest for Luke might very well be part of the first 5 minutes of the movie, and then we'll just move on.
Well, that's true. Yeah, it could be like the setup, which it'd be interesting. I do think it will be in the movie. It is just a question of how prominently you'd want to feature a plot like that. But I do like the plot. I do like the concept of, especially if it's like you're 30 years removed and we haven't seen Luke Skywalker. Because that's very similar to like if Luke Skywalker's been in exile. Let's face it, at the end of Return of the Jedi, yes, things turn out well, but think of the damage and the harm caused by the Empire and by, Anakin Skywalker turning to the dark side. I mean, he may have been redeemed, but there's still the aftermath and the horror of what the Empire did. And I could see, like, there being, Luke Skywalker decides to retreat into Hermitage and says, well, the Jedi Order is kind of responsible for all of this. Why would we restart it? Right?
There's going to be a power vacuum. Now, you don't have the Emperor, you don't have Darth Vader. Who is going to keep all these planets together? I mean, it's very easy to, and that would be actually be another, great plot point for these new Star Wars movies, because science fiction, fantasy, if it's done well, it's also a reflection of our times and the things that are on our minds. And, what's the big problem in the world right now? It's like the world falling apart, the lack of unity. Russia, who used to be this big power, and now you've got all these different little countries, and Russia is trying to gain back that power. And, well, you see the stuff in Ukraine. And that, I mean, I could totally see a Star Wars parallel as well, where the universe, the galaxy has fallen apart after the defeat of the Emperor. And now there is a new unseen force, an ancient evil that is trying to put the Empire together together again. And then, of course, that kind of revives the quest for balance, for justice, and might be the wake-up call for Luke Skywalker, like, hey, you were in retreat, but you're needed again, and you are too old yourself, so you got to train a new generation.
Yeah, and that would be amazing. And I think, like, that the idea of a dystopian Star Wars, like, because that's really popular right now, whether it's World War Z or The Hunger Games or any number of other popular franchises, The Walking Dead, if you're Disney, you're thinking, well, it sells. It's popular right now. So, it might be even the confluence of good story and also, popular story. Good story,
well,
and popular story.
And we live in a time where a lot of the television shows are in that vein. I mean, we've seen the remake of Battlestar Galactica, and it was such a success, I think, because it did reflect a lot of the issues that we are currently dealing with. And a lot of those issues are in a certain way timeless. They repeat in history time and again. So it's not going to date the movie either. It's just political stuff. And then that is the basis of the wars in Star Wars. So there has to be a conflict. And I think the conflict could be in the first movie, between all these different factions that are falling apart. And there might be this new evil that is emerging that thinks, well, now might be a good time to bring back the Empire, bring back order to the chaos. And that might be, already in place when or happening when the movie opens. And because there has to be a reason for Luke Skywalker to get involved again. There has to be a reason to bring back Han Solo and Princess Leia. And it's got to be personal.
And it can't be like
those rumors about the son of Han Solo, you know, being seduced to the dark side. That totally makes sense to me.
Well,
because makes it so much more, you know, tangible what this evil is.
Well, absolutely. And you have to have it compelling. I mean, it can't be like the opening can't just be, well, this is the 30th anniversary of the Battle of Endor. We're all getting the band back together as like a high school reunion or something. But, and you're right. There possibly is a power vacuum. Although I think the answer to who might fill that is Chief Logray. I was always suspicious of that Ewok.
Huh.
I kid. Wow, what a great conversation. Wow, I'm so glad that you're able to join us on this episode. And I, man, there's always so much Star Wars news and rumors to talk about. I'm so glad you joined us for this episode to kind of talk about the latest crazy shenanigans coming out of the Star Wars fandom. You know what, Father? Some things never change. Indeed.
That's true. That's true. And this will hopefully go on for many decades because Star Wars has a new youth and a new future.
Absolutely.
And man, I was thinking you were going to put me on the grill for my opinion about the prequels.
Well, I think I'm going to have to put that on the back burner, but I'll tell you what.
Another time.
I'll make a deal. This deal's getting worse all the time. No, I'll make a deal. I'll have you back on. We'll talk about the prequels and kind of maybe delve a little bit more back into your history and thoughts on the franchise in general. As well.
I'd love it.
Absolutely. Awesome. Well, where can folks find you online if they're interested in continuing to follow your pursuits in the world of new media and podcasting?
You can just follow me as Father Roderick on Twitter and on Facebook. Just Google my name. And SQPN is kind of the platform on which I publish a lot of my podcasts. And of course, if you're into Star Wars, and why wouldn't you if you're listening to this show, you might want to check out The Secrets of Star Wars, which you can find in the iTunes store, but also by going to starwars.sqpn.com. However, word of warning, we are, you know, all limits are up. We're going into spoiler territory. We talk about anything because, well, that's what we do. And there are a lot of shows that don't do that. So we our niche is to just talk about the future Star Wars movies and about the plot and what it means and the characters and that. And so this kind of discussion that we just had, that's kind of the core of what we do at Secrets of Star Wars as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely check it out. It's a great show. And I enjoyed I made an appearance post Star Wars weekend. So you can jump back in the archives. You'll find me there, too. So, yeah, definitely. Father, I'm a huge fan of you and your work. So thank you so much for spending some time with us.
Likewise. And thanks for having me.
Wow. Huge thank you to Father Roderick again. Check out all of his amazing work that he's doing with SQPN at sqpn.com. He's got more podcasts than you can possibly imagine. and Father Roderick's an all-around awesome fellow. So definitely stay up. And hey, if you want to hear my continuing thoughts and my sister Bethany, we're on the Secrets of the Hobbit podcast, and we'll probably be doing a breakdown of the soon-to-be-released Hobbit, The Battle of Five Armies teaser trailer, which is set to come out very soon. So stay tuned there. But that's going to do it for this episode of the Star Wars Report. Hey, remember, follow us. We're Facebook.com/Star Wars Report, Twitter.com/Star Wars Report. If you're new to the show, if you're hearing us for the first time, head over to StarWarsReport.com/about, and that'll tell you all about the Star Wars Report podcast and our whole family of podcasts on StarWarsReport.com, and that's also where you'll find links to all the social media, to the voicemail hotline. It's all there, and also the ways to subscribe to the show. Hey, if you enjoyed this episode, we do appreciate you guys who've been leaving us reviews on iTunes. It really helps out. Guys, it really does help out the show. So it'll only take a moment out of your day. If you've enjoyed this podcast episode or enjoy this podcast, head over to StarWarsReport.com/iTunes, and that'll take you right to our iTunes page. You can click there and launch up iTunes and leave those ratings and reviews. That's it. Hey, if you want to follow me on Twitter or Instagram, I'm at TheRileyGuy, R-I-L-E-Y, posting pretty regularly some Star Wars, some Tolkien, some ROTC, some college stuff. All of the general Riley goings-ons are on my Twitter and Instagram. So again, that's at TheRileyGuy. I think that's it. I don't think I've forgotten anything. So that wraps up this episode of the Star Wars Report. Stay tuned as we cover the San Diego extravaganza very soon. And remember, many Bothans died to bring you this podcast.